and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Good morning, Sovereign Minds. This is not Mark Kent today, nor is my co-host, Janet Chandler. She is not Linda Kent. So Mark and Linda are out again, still dealing with their loss. So, again, our thoughts and prayers go out to both of them. And this Mother's Day is a pretty rough holiday for them. So our thoughts and prayers are with you guys. We'll do the best we can. We can never replace you, but we'll do our best to fill in. So this is Chris Kellstrom. And my co-host here, Janet Chandler.
Good morning, people in the state of Jefferson, even though we are now Sovereign Minds. But remember, Jefferson is a sovereign state.
That's right, the sovereign state of Jefferson. So happy Mother's Day to you today, Janet.
Thank you very much. I was thinking about what an honor it is to be a mother, and I thank my two sons for giving me that privilege. And the only thing better than being a mother is being a grandmother. But you got to be the first before you can be the second.
That's true. And happy Mother's Day to my wonderful wife out there and also my mother. But I hope Julie's listening. You're a great mom, great wife, and I thank you for all you do.
Mothers are special. They yep. are a little bit crazy, but they are special.
At least the good ones are.
Yeah.
So we're going to fill in today. Again, we're Sovereign Jefferson Minds, so... We can't replace Mark and Red and Linda. They do such an awesome job there. We're more into Jefferson than the Sovereign Minds part, so we'll just do a little bit of mixture of both. So I think last week we were talking about the Jefferson Constitution and what we kind of expect to look Jefferson to look like. We asked you guys a lot of questions, so maybe you've had a week to think about those. Maybe somebody can call in and say, why we should or should not have nuclear weapons. Those are an arm, and arms shall not be infringed. So, I don't know. Any thoughts out there?
Oh, well, when we were talking about this in our constitutional committee, the first reaction was, well, you can't just let people have any weapon, like you're going to let them have tanks. Well, remember what that constitution says. The right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And there was no definition of arms. It didn't say except for any modern weapons that may come up in the future. It just said arms. And remember what it's there for, to protect us against the infringement and the oppression of government, whether it's a foreign government or a domestic government. So are we going to be out there with spears and wooden spoons fighting off an assault? I think back to World War II, when the Nazis came into Poland. The Nazis had modern, up-to-date weapons. Many of the Polish infantry and cavalry were actually on horseback. How much chance did they have? How much chance would we have if all we had was 22s and pellet guns?
Now, we are being a little tongue-in-cheek, of course. I believe neither one of us really think anybody should have a nuclear weapon. I'm not real wild about the idea of people having tanks, to be honest with you. But, the question is why? Why not? Why or why not? So arms at the time when they shall not be infringed, arms during the American Revolution were, you know, truthfully, they were muskets. But those were the most modern arms of the times. And our forefathers wanted our people to have the same arms that the most modern arms at the time were. So,
but remember, they also had cannons. Are we going to be, were the revolutionaries going to be restricted? No, you can't have cannons because those are weapons of war.
And our forefathers ended up having cannons. They were not restricted. After it became a government, they were not restricted then. So, again, we're not advocating that everybody should have a nuclear weapon. We're not advocating everybody should have a rocket launcher or a tank. But again, why or why not? Where is that line? Where do you draw that? Shall not be infringed. It's pretty simple. Shall not be infringed. So, you know, those are all questions that Janet's working very hard on this Constitution, and those are the things that are coming up. So, you know, how do you decide what you can and can't have or what you can and can't do?
And I think, as Mark Baird keeps saying, where do you draw the line? Where's your line in the sand? Well, if you can't have tanks, if you can't have nuclear weapons, you know, that, like, you can make that argument. But then I have heard people on the news, Democrats on the news, saying, but you can't have any weapons of war. So if it is a military rifle, you can't have it, because why would you want to have a military rifle in the civilian world? Well, for the same reason that the revolutionaries wanted them, to fight off an oppressive domestic government.
So we have a Mark on the line. We think it might be Mark Baird. So maybe he's calling in and with us our answer, should we have nuclear weapons in Jefferson or not? I'm not sure. Maybe he's calling in for something else. Mark, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Chris. Hi, Janet.
Hello.
It is Mark Baird. Now, I'm not so much calling as a citizen of Jefferson right now. I'm calling because the Second Amendment is an issue that's very near and dear to my heart, and so I just wanted to chime in on this particular discussion with regard to our Constitution and say, first of all, it's not illegal to own a tank now. I mean, a lot of people own tanks. It's tough to get ammunition for them, but, and personally, now, you know, someone asked me, I give Second Amendment speeches as well, and someone asked me, well, would you want to own a tank? And my answer was honest. Well, no, I wouldn't, because I don't really want to maintain it and don't have a place to park it. But I know my neighbors. I know the people in my community. If one of them wanted to have a tank, I'm fine with that. I trust them. And I know where I'd go hide if something bad happened. I'd go down to my neighbors who has the tank. It's not illegal to own a jet fighter in the United States. You're not allowed to own frontline jet fighters currently in the military arsenal, but you can own a jet fighter. There's no prohibition against that. See, here's the deal. You trust people with liberty or you don't. Do you really trust a government that doesn't trust you to have the same implements and tools that they themselves possess in order to control you? My answer to that is no. If you trust in liberty and you trust in constitutional republic, then you also have to trust your friends, neighbors, citizens, community members, citizens of your state to have the same implements that the state would have if they wanted to oppress you. And Miller versus United States said that the only weapons specifically protected by the Second Amendment are those of military use and military grade. That's why they banned the sawed-off shotgun, specifically because they said it had no military value and therefore was not protected by the Second Amendment. So I say the citizens need every single weapon that the government has to use against us. Now, nuclear weapons, that's a whole nother topic. That requires a ton of physics, billions of dollars. You know, quite frankly, people who bring that up are just being silly. It isn't a problem now. It never has been a problem. If private citizens possessing nuclear weapons becomes a problem, certainly we can address that in the future. But for now, I say whatever they have, I have a right and a responsibility to have myself.
We have for so long been told no by our government about a lot of things. And because we don't know what it's like to live in liberty, we have gotten used to just saying, okay, the government says no, I guess that means no, I'll shut up and not try to fight them. It's time to stand up to the government and say why. Why not? How does that really affect my liberty? And not be so ready to accept the government's opinion as to what we can and can't do.
Sure. And the easy answer to this, Janet, is, you know, we have a constitution that allows all the liberty and freedom that God intended us to have. Now, we can also have penal codes that say, if you use your gun for something stupid or criminal, we will lock you up and throw away the key. That's the counterbalance to that, because, quite frankly, law never stopped anyone from doing anything they wanted to anyway. Law is only designed to punish a criminal after he's committed the offense. So what our laws will reflect is our intolerance to those who choose to use their weapon in criminal ways. That will have a punishment that there won't be any escape from. However, you as a citizen, a law-abiding citizen, have the right to have any weapon the government possesses. Just don't make a mistake with it.
I love your interpretation. And the only place that tells me that I cannot commit murder is in the Ten Commandments. The penal code just tells me what happens if I do it. And there is a difference between killing and murder. Murder is a political term. Killing is a generic term.
The definition of murder is taking another human life. Now, there are justifiable, that's called homicide. There are justifiable homicides. The term homicide simply means that someone took someone else's life. But in court, it's decided whether that homicide was justifiable or not. And that's where responsibility comes in. You have the liberty to do anything you want, but you have a responsibility to obey a moral code where you do not infringe upon the liberty or life or property of someone else in the expression of your liberty. And that's what Jefferson means to me. It's the opportunity to have liberty, but you also have the responsibility to obey the moral code and obey the law so that you don't infringe on the liberty of others. Come on, folks. Let's get back to being adults here with adult choices and adult consequences so that we're responsible for those choices. And thanks, guys. I'll let you get back to your program.
Hey, we have a caller with a,
51.
We have a caller with a question for you, Mark, if you're still there. We have Nick on the phone. Okay. He'd like to ask you a question.
Okay.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Hey, yeah, I was reading some comments the other day, and one of them said that the 12-cent gas tax that they had put on gas this year, the state decided they didn't need that. They had plenty of money for the roads, so they've evidently put that in the general fund. Have you got any information on that?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. The state has been taking road money and gas tax in the form of gas taxes and putting it in the general fund for years and years and years. That's why they have to keep increasing the gas taxes, because they don't use the money for roads. They use it for whatever they want. And who pays more gas tax? People in rural areas like me who have to drive 40 miles to the grocery store one way? I drive 20 miles just to go to the post office and back. And, by the way, they won't deliver mail to my house because it's up a dirt road. So, yeah, they've been doing that. They've been stealing you blind for years, and you just didn't know it.
Aren't we about to get another gas tax added to us with the cap and trade tax? Doesn't that take effect June 1st?
That's the unseen tax because, you know, well, we're not taxing you. We're taxing the polluters who are destroying the environment, and we need to allow the Chinese to continue to destroy the environment, so we'll save it for them. And then you don't think the producers are going to turn around and pass that cost increase on to you?
Well, it seems to me that our government's deceiving us and lying to us to get more money. And,
look, carbon taxes, any carbon-based tax is the most torturous and unfair tax on the planet because it always attacks the people who can afford to pay it least. Do you think Tim Draper cares about how much gasoline costs or what's her name, Barbara Streisand, or any of the Hollywood or coastal or tech elites? Do you think they care how much gasoline costs? Of course not. They're the ones that want to take your guns, but all of their guards have guns. They're the ones that want to take your ability to buy gasoline away, but Leonardo DiCaprio flies back and forth to Paris in his private jet to protest climate change. I mean, let's all grow up here. And
another
let's all
fine
take
example
this
of
bull
them
by
lying
the horns.
To us and taking
we're
our money
being
when
subjugated.
They, took
we're
the,
being enslaved. And it is up to us to stop it. And no one is going to help us do it. We are it. The people are the front line in this fight.
That's absolutely right. How about the water storage bond? Didn't they lie to us and take our money and not use it for that?
Well, look, FB1, $8 billion to fix California infrastructure, and not one single cent of it's going to build water storage. That's a bill that Californians are going to pay back at $366 million a year for the next 40 years. And it's only been law for, what, 2 or 3 years, and they're already coming back for more. Gosh, go figure. What a scam. What a game. Boy, I wish I could do that in my private life. I wish I could charge customers whatever I wanted and then come back a year later and say, yeah, you know, that wasn't enough. I want more.
Well, you can. You'll just go bankrupt the next year.
Well, yes.
Well,
that's,
California, you know what?
Right. So
they came out with this phony
the
deal saying
plain.
We're the fifth largest
the game
economy
plan is
in
plain.
The world now. You
we
talk
have
about
answers
a welfare
to these things,
economy.
But we need your help and everyone's help to do it.
All right. Hey, we thank both of you guys. It seems that we're getting some talking over there, so I think we have a little
all
bit
right.
of a...
Well, thanks, fellas. I appreciate it. Thanks, Janet. Happy Mother's Day to everybody, and God bless you all for doing what you're doing, and I will talk to you soon.
All right.
Thank
thanks,
you,
Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah, with liberty goes responsibility. You can't have one without the other. It's two sides of the same coin.
All right, I think we're getting ready to go to a break, so we'll go off to a break, and you guys keep calling in, and we'll take some more calls. So even though this is Sovereign Minds, the time has come for 51.
Hey, it's Bad Bob, producer for Free Fire Radio, the very best way to start your day in the North State. Every Monday through Friday from 7 to 9, Carl and Linda Bott bring you what's happening in our community, from politics to entertainment and the issues you care about. If you like what you're hearing, won't you please tell a friend that local live radio is what we're all about? I love my job. Tune in and find out why, right here, Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m., on the home of Free Fire Media, KCNR 1460.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon to 2.
Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media soundbites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join Aaron and Bill this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. We the People, brought to you by Team Power of Shasta Lake, your local Kubota and John Deere dealer. Call them at 530-226-9226. We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
May is First Responder Month, and KCNR 1460 joins with our community in a salute to law enforcement, fire, and medical personnel.
I would like to take this opportunity to thank our first responders in Shasta and Tehama County for all you do. You have one of the most challenging jobs in the world. Joe Rodola from Joe Rodola's Debt Consulting thanks you for helping save lives and protecting our property.
To those who run toward danger when the alarm sounds, a heartfelt thank you from your community and Free Fire Media.
Sadly in search of one step in my heart, themselves and their slow moving dreams. Cowboys are special. With their own brand of misery, it'll be long, too long.
All right, our special song there for LaVoy Finnegan, who lost his life to an oppressive government. So, rest in peace, LaVoy, and I hope there's justice for you soon. In the meantime, let's free the Hammonds. We got the Bundys out. We need to free the Hammonds now. So, all right, Janet, what do we say we get back to Jefferson? What do we have coming up in Jefferson? Anything happening?
Announcements. Okay, at least two very major events coming up on May 26th at the Jefferson Fest at Anderson River Park, sponsored by the Liberty Tour. From 12 noon to 8, it's free to come. There will be a charge if you want to send your kids through the laser tag or to buy food. But otherwise, come and listen to the bands. That's free. Anderson River Park. Bring your own chairs, sit, enjoy the day. It's May. It should be beautiful. I don't know, up on the mountain where I live, it's getting a little chilly at night still, and it's not that warm during the daytime sometimes. But down here in the valley, you should have a wonderful day. Also, Chris, where do you intend to be on June 1st at 10 o'clock in the morning?
June 1st, I normally would be working, and at 10 o'clock in the morning, I would be in probably leaving Dunsmuir. But on that day, I will be down at the Robert Matsui Courthouse at 501 I Street in Sacramento because we have a court case. It's a very important court case. We're going to decide, the judge is going to decide whether we get the three-judge panel that we are entitled to or if she's going to somehow find a way to try to take that away from us. Gave it to us once. She may try to take it away. I don't know. We'll see what happens. So June 1st, we all need to be down there. Everybody that's interested in Jefferson, that's, you know, supports Jefferson, I'm taking the day off from work. You know, granted it's a work day, but you know what? Make it a three-day weekend. You can have two of those in a row. So you can have a Memorial Day weekend and then your June 1st weekend also. But take the day off if you have to. Get down to Sacramento. The more of us there, the more pressure on the judge there is. You know, I had a friend of mine the other day telling me, well, the judge has probably made up her mind, and he was trying to find a reason why, you know, he shouldn't have to be there. And I said, well, that's all true, but, you know, look at some of the decisions were made in the face of mobs. If you look at Ferguson, Missouri, some of those people, elected officials, made decisions they probably would not normally have made if there hadn't been thousands of people out in the streets ready to riot. Now, granted, Jeffersonians don't usually turn over cars and set them on fire and break out store windows, but the judge doesn't know that. So if we have a courtroom full of green shirts and a hallway full of green shirts and three floors of that courthouse full of green shirts and flags and green shirts on the sidewalk out front, it very well may sway her opinion as to what she wants to do and whether she does the right thing or not. So we all need to be there in numbers.
I think this judge knows what she has to do legally. She just doesn't want to do it because her friends at the state level are encouraging her not to. And, of course, the friends at the state level don't care what's legal and what's not. They just want their way, as we have found out many times. So be there. Be a show of force. Let the state and the federal court know that we are a force to be reckoned with, and we are not going away quietly into that good night. We are going to fight the good fight.
Now, we have another court date on June 15th, but keep in mind, June 1st is to decide whether we have a three-judge panel or not, which is crucial to us. Again, three-judge panel, the appeal goes to the Supreme Court of the United States. So we don't care if we win, we don't care if we lose, we want to be in the Supreme Court of the United States. So three-judge panel is crucial on that. Now, May 15th, we have a hearing on whether they dismiss June 15th. They have a hearing on whether we dismiss the case or not. Now, that will be heard before a three-judge panel if we get our way on June 1st. So June 15th is important. June 1st is extremely important. So let's everybody get there. No excuses. You know, do what you have to do. Get down to Sacramento. The court starts at 10. We all plan on being there by 9, and just so you know, it's going to take a while to get through metal detectors and everything, so I wouldn't be against most of you getting there at 8, so be down there June 1st.
Okay, I think we have a call from Ron.
Ron, are you on the line?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
Okay, I hope I don't sound too radical with this next statement, but they can have my AR-15 if they want, but, you know, I'd really rather have a flamethrower and maybe some napalm. Or either a handheld rocket launcher with a ASRock or a Stinger missile. So,
are you responsible, Ron? Are you a responsible person?
Yes, I think I am.
Are you a law-abiding citizen?
I don't think I use it unless I was attacked. But if I'm attacked, then I want to be able to have something to defend myself with in my house. So.
And are you a law-abiding citizen? Would you, you know, go by the laws of the land, whatever they may be, for the most part?
I think so. I'm already own a weapon. I have a valid CCW, so I guess I'm.
Have you used that weapon in any illegal activities?
Any illegal? No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, I don't know. Janet, I vote let Ron have a flamethrower. I don't mind.
You know the beauty of it? We don't have to vote. The Constitution already says he can, and it isn't up to us to decide. And I know why you have a CCW permit, but doesn't it just irritate you that you have to get one because the Constitution's Second Amendment already says you have the right to keep and bear arms without infringement?
Yes, and I think I've supported the Constitution. I think I'm a pretty responsible person. I think I've earned the right because I have a DD-214. So
there you go.
That's
thank
how
you.
I think about things.
Thank you for your service.
You're very welcome, man.
All right, and just don't practice shooting the flamethrower like in July and August. That's all we ask.
Well, I would have to hold back on that part of
that
it.
That goes to the responsibility part, though.
That's it. You got it.
All right, Ron.
Thank you very much.
You bet. All right, we also have Gary Hollihan. Hopefully Gary doesn't have a flamethrower, but I know he's very responsible. Are you there, Gary?
Well, I've been thinking about it, really. But and happy Mother's Day, Janet.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, to emphasize what you've been saying, June 1 is ours to win or lose. And we need 30,000 people at least in Sacramento. Because when the judge looks out the courthouse window, or has one of her minions say, what's happening out there? And they say, oh, there are only a couple hundred people out there. She's just going to laugh and say, oh, that's nothing. Big deal. They say, hey, it looks like there's about 15,000 people out there. She will sit up and take notice. And besides, it is ours, ladies and gentlemen, to win with the state of Jefferson, or to lose if you want to be enslaved. So it's our choice, and June 1 is the date in Sacramento.
Yeah, so
thank you very much for letting me vent.
Thank you, Gary. Yeah, in a perfect world, all she would use is the law to make her decision, but unfortunately we're not in a perfect world, nor are we in a perfect state. So the more pressure we put on her, the more we let her know that, hey, you know, there's a whole other side to this argument, and, you know, maybe the powers that be that got you in your black robe aren't necessarily the only powers that be on the face of this earth. So, you know, do the right thing, pay attention, use the law to make your decision, not who somebody told you to do.
You're always asking out there, what can we do to help Jefferson happen? Well, this is one of those things.
Yep, absolutely.
Be at the Robert Matsui Courthouse on June 1st by 10 o'clock.
All right. I think we're getting ready to go to another break, so we'll go to a break, and we'll see you on the other side. Phone lines are open.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? Every week there's a new chapter. To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program, Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on KCNR 1460 AM with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
May is First Responder Month, and KCNR 1460 joins with our community in a salute to law enforcement, fire, and medical personnel.
Hey, this is Kenny Breedlove at Market Street Steakhouse. On behalf of Wes and I want to personally thank all the first responders, including fire, police, and medical. All of us at Market Street Steakhouse appreciate all you do.
To those who run toward danger when the alarm sounds, a heartfelt thank you from your community and Free Fire Media.
This is Sharon Clark, owner of Home Helpers. Join me at 9 a.m. every Wednesday for Generations Talk Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Topics will include resources and businesses that you need to know about. We will talk money, travel, healthcare, and more. Embrace aging. Listen to Generations Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. here on KCNR 1460. Archive shows at generationstalkradio.com.
A jewel of the North State, a place we love to go and love being members.
The view, the best in the North State, from the restaurants, meeting rooms, and of course on the award-winning 18-hole golf course, Riverview Golf and Country Club. It's the place to belong.
Go in and meet the friendly staff today, or go to their website at riverviewgolf.net and find out about their introductory memberships.
Riverview Golf and Country Club, corporate, social, tennis, fitness, and golf. Get it all. Become a member.
It's affordable and fun. Riverview Golf and Country Club.
And that song goes out to Mark and Linda in dedication to Shirley, their mother that was recently passed. So, again, our thoughts and prayers are with you guys. You guys take care, and hopefully we'll hear you next week. All right, it sounds like we think we have Roberta on the phone. Is that you, Roberta?
It certainly is me. And, hey, Chris, you know you mentioned green shirts, but we don't care what color your shirt is. Just get your body there.
That's true. That's true. Green, yellow, black, it doesn't matter. Get down there, make your presence known, let them know what you're there for. We have eyes on you and we are watching you, and you need to answer us, we the people, not we your donors.
That's right. But as many people that do have green shirts, yes, please wear them. But anyway, I'll see you down there.
All right. Sounds good, Roberta. See you there.
Perfect. And remember, remember, this is for CFR, Citizens for Fair Representation. It represents everybody in the entire state of California who is not being adequately represented. It exceeds Jefferson State borders. Just because you live someplace outside of Jefferson doesn't mean that we're not fighting for you and your representational rights also.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, a lot of the people that were plaintiffs in the lawsuit were not just Jeffersonians. We had Native American tribes. We had the Green Party. We had the independent parties. I mean, we had quite a few people on there other than just Jeffersonians. So that's why it is the Citizens for Representation, because nobody in California has fair representation. All citizens do not have fair representation in California, and that's what the whole thing's about. So absolutely, it doesn't have to be just be green shirts. You're absolutely correct, Roberta. And, yeah, let's get the Native American tribes down there that are plaintiffs on the lawsuit. Let's get the Green Party that are plaintiffs on the lawsuit. Let's get everybody down there, because this lawsuit is important to everybody, not just Jefferson's, but everybody involved. So let's everybody get down there.
Sounds good. And I'm going to be there. I'm dragging my husband. I'm dragging my son. I told them that this is my Mother's Day honorarium here.
Yeah, I could probably get my son down there, too, to miss a day of school. I don't think he would mind that too much. So, really, this is a more important. You're going to remember this 30 years from now. You're not going to remember that $100 or $200 that you made on that day's of work. You're going to remember that I was there. I made a difference. Hopefully, we all make a difference, and hopefully we get what we want, which is a three-judge panel. So, now, also, like I said, there's a court date on the 15th, but the day before the 15th, there's a fundraiser in Calaveras County. So it's going to be at the Dodassa Ranch in Burson. It's a Thursday night, so you guys could go down and go to the fundraiser on Thursday night, and then next morning get up and go to the courthouse on the 15th. So we also have a few things. Frank Rose was just here, so to do him a shout-out, give him a favor here, don't forget about the Served Like a Girl. It's going to be a movie that's going to be shown at the Anderson VFW Hall on Saturday, May 19th at 5 p.m., and they'll have a couple guest speakers, a mother and her son who are psychologists, and they talk about women veterans and some of the things they went through. It's supposed to be a really good film, so it's free. The bar will be open, so you can have a drink or two before you go watch the movie or after the movie or whatever. So go on down to the VFW Hall in Anderson, 3210 West Center Street, 5 o'clock next Saturday.
Sounds good.
All right.
I got my sample ballot in the mail this week, and it was really funny because which of the 500 people are you going to vote for governor and for state senator? It is certainly a system in which you have a choice, but choose wisely on those. And as far as the ballot measures go, I have an IQ test for all of you out there. If you vote yes on any bond issue, you ought to think very carefully about where that yes vote is coming from. California has never, in the last decades, spent the money on a bond issue and what they're supposed to spend it on. It ends up in the general fund. Your money is wasted. How many times have we voted, yes, the gas tax money has to go for infrastructure and roads? It doesn't happen. Don't vote yes on a bond issue. I mean, how many times can you be fooled by a state that is criminal?
Yeah, and even when the money that supposedly is going to somewhere, I'll never forget the lottery money, and I remind people this all the time. Boy, the lottery money was going to make our schools flush with funds. Every kid was going to have an iPad. Of course, we didn't have iPads back then, but nowadays they would. But, the lottery money was going to make the schools flush with funds. Well, were the schools flush with funds? Are they flush with funds now? No. Why? Because they took the lottery money, and they put it right to the schools, just like they promised they would, and then they took that same amount out of the school budget and dropped that into the general budget. So the net result of schools was zero, and the net result to California general funds, increased however much the lottery money brought in. So even when they say the money's going to go to where it's supposed to go, it doesn't go there.
You can't trust them. If they won't trust you with a gun, don't you trust them with your bond money.
There you go. Good analogy, Janet. So, all right. How about we get into the Jefferson Constitution again? So you got some good stuff for us. I always learn a lot when I'm sitting next to Janet because she's a front line on the Constitution. So
one of my passions, boy, did I get interested in constitutions when we wrote this one. I made some notes last time, and we did not get to the section on education, which is an extremely important one. If you look at what's going on in education today in California, it is to death. And you should almost be happy that there's not the lottery money going to the schools because it's being wasted. I'm here to tell you, nobody's getting educated.
Well, we spend more per student in California schools. You're telling me we're not number one, Janet?
No, I don't think so. What are we, 48 or something? It's way
48
down.
48 sounds about right. So, yeah. You know, maybe when Jefferson happens, that'll move to 49th for California. And hopefully Jefferson will be like one or two or three or something like that.
I would hope so. Because in Jefferson, we are anticipating an educational system based on choice. The choice of parents to choose what kind of education they want their children to have. It's not going to be based on what the state thinks you should have. It's up to the parents. You know, we used to have a system in which parents had a local school district and a school board, and the parents told the school board how they wanted the education system run, and the school boards provided the guidance for that. Now the school boards just answer to the state. They're toadies to the state. They can't make any decisions on their own. Even textbooks, it comes from the state. They make all the decisions. In Jefferson, that's going to be turned around. We're going to turn the choice back to the parents, who will be the legal, absolute guardians of their children, and they will make the decisions for their children.
So, like, if your property taxes are going to the local schools, and those local schools are horrible, what could you do about that?
Well, in the first place, I don't know what you're talking about, property taxes.
Okay, if your consumption taxes on the purchase of a house go to the schools and the schools are horrible, would you be able to redistribute that money somewhere else? Like, I don't know, maybe a charter school or private school?
Well, see, there's the beauty of it. The money is not going to go to the schools. The money is going to be allocated to each student. And the parents will decide how they want to spend their students' allocation of funds. And if they want to send them to school A, then that's where the money will go. If they want to send them to school B, that's where their money will go. It will be up to the parents to choose.
But if you have a really horrible school district in your area, then you wouldn't be allocating your money to there. Wouldn't that be bad for that school?
Okay. See, there again, we're not thinking outside the box. What are you talking about, school district? I don't get it.
Oh, well, I was
there
just...
There will not be a government school district.
Huh. So if there's a bad school in your area and, you know, you just don't send your kid there?
Well, you will send the kid wherever you want to send them. There will no longer be this concept of your local neighborhood state school.
Huh.
This is going to disappear. Homeschooling is an option. I have stated before, I homeschooled my two sons for a time because the local school was not doing any good. They were actually causing harm to at least one of my boys. And I could not stand by and let that happen, and I took them out of the school and taught them at home. It was an extremely rewarding experience. I cannot tell you how much I enjoyed the year that I had my boys at home teaching them.
So if you have a good school in your area and a bad school in your area, they won't get equal amount of students and
funding? Well, would you send your kid to what you think is a bad school?
Well, no, but right now you have to.
Because there's no choice.
Oh, yeah.
But under
okay.
Jefferson, you will have a choice. And if parents want to band together and create a school that suits the needs of their students, then they will put their allocated money towards that system, towards that school, whatever it may be. And under a free market system, the bad schools disappear and the good schools replace them. And that's what we are envisioning with Jefferson.
Yeah, and see, that's our kids are, well, my daughter's graduating now, but our boy still goes to Cottonwood schools. And the reason he goes to Cottonwood schools is we knew they were good schools. That's why we lived in Cottonwood. That's why we went down there. We wanted to give our kids a chance to go to a good school, and they are. They're great schools. You know, obviously they have a few problems like every school. But all in all, for the most part, they are really good schools. And if I had a choice right now with where I could put my kid, well, our schools are good and they would remain good, and I would probably remain keeping him there. But, you know, if you're in an area with bad schools, you don't really have a choice right now. Your kids, that's where you live, that's where they go, and, you know, you can go to board meetings and complain, you can write letters, you can do whatever you want, it doesn't matter. Those teachers aren't going away, the school isn't going away, and you're paying the fees. So if you want to send your kid to another school, you continue to support that school in the current system we have through your taxes, and then you go ahead and pay out of your pocket to send your kid to a normal school while you're still funding the bad school. So,
and it makes no economic sense, it makes no social sense, and it makes no educational sense. So we're trying to bring common sense back to the schools, not Common Core, however.
And school choice would make all schools better, quite frankly, because if you have a school where the teachers are underperforming and the school's not doing really well, if all of a sudden you decide you have a choice of, I'm not going to fund that school anymore until they start doing a better job, well, guess what? They're going to do a better job real quick.
And we're not dissing on teachers here. I am a retired teacher. I know the problems you face in the classroom. And if the teachers want to get together and create a school that they think will serve the educational needs, they can do that. They're not tied to a default local publicly funded school. There will be no publicly funded schools. It will all be allocated money. It will be spent according to what the parents want.
Now, one of my ideas I had, and I'm springing this on you, Janet, we've never talked about this before, so maybe we should have talked about this.
Oh, no, I can feel this one.
Okay. Well, you know, Bernie Sanders got a lot of support through his, you know, free college for everyone, and wanted to offer college for everyone, and I thought about this at the time with Jefferson and wanting to reach out to some millennials and younger people. And, you know, at the time I thought, well, offering free college education to everybody is just not feasible. The money has to come from somewhere. There's no free anything out there. The money is coming from somewhere. But I thought, you know, the one thing that we could do in Jefferson, and maybe this wouldn't work with the plan of school choice if they're not public employees or public unions, but maybe in junior colleges or colleges it would work. My thoughts on colleges is to be more transparent. In other words, in that catalog of classes, in the first two or three pages, have the positions and the names and the wages that those people are being paid. And when you see that the dean and the associate dean and the dean's assistant and on and on and on down the line are making hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, you know, you take a kid that's sitting in a statistics class and he's looking around thinking, I'm paying $1,000 per unit here. This is a 3-unit class. It's $3,000, you know, for me to take this class. There's 33 and a third students in the class. That'll make it easy. And that's $100,000 in tuition for this one class. Now, the teacher probably teaches 3 classes a day and 2 semesters a year, so he probably teaches 6 of these classes. That's $600,000 worth of tuition that he's teaching, and he may make, I don't know, $100,000 a year, say. Where is that other $500,000 in tuition going? If the teacher's making $100,000 and there's $600,000 in tuition going to this one class, the statistics class, where is the other $500,000 going? Why is my tuition $1,000 a unit? When, you know, and I always thought if you were transparent and were able to show this is what everybody's making down from the dean down to the janitor, you know, the janitor obviously isn't going to have much of an impact on the school. The teacher himself in that class, which really is where everything happens, isn't having that much of an impact on the class. Why is there so much money out there in overhead? What do you think?
Well, I think we're due for a break, so let's take that and then come back and talk about that issue.
All right. We'll see you on the other side.
God bless the working man.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank,
consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Tobacco and Brew has been a sponsor here on KCNR 1460 since we started the station 8 years ago. A long-standing Reading tradition, Tobacco and Brew is locally owned, backs our veterans, and does so much more for this community. It's located at 2143 Hilltop Drive. Check out their new lines, new products, new briar pipes, and of course, the famous walk-in humidor. Come in and see the newly remodeled Tobacco and Brew. 2143 Hilltop Drive, open 7 days a week.
I am Dan, owner of Dan's Optical Lab. For years, I've made prescription eyewear for other eye doctors throughout the North State. Now I'm opening my lab directly to the public. You can purchase the highest quality in prescription eyewear, but directly from the lab. That means you get it faster and you get it for less. I don't just sell prescription eyewear, I make it. And because I do, I have to know more about the lens materials, designs, and frames that are available. If you want the highest quality in prescription eyewear, then go where the doctors go, Dan's Optical Lab, faster for less.
Life and fades away. Another young man takes his place. Average Joe, average pay, same old end, the same old day. But there's nothing wrong with a hard hat and a hammer.
Nothing wrong with a hard hat and a hammer. We need more of those in Jefferson. We get some of these regulations out of the way and some of these jobs back here, we'll have more hard hats and hammers.
But that's a great segue right into education, because with hard hat and hammer jobs, in the last couple months, I have had to pay a plumber to come to my house. I wish I were getting that kind of money, and he's worth every dime. He knows what he's doing. He has a skill. He takes care of it. I see a lot more productivity from hard hat and hammer jobs than I do from a lot of college professors. In Jefferson, we are going to not eliminate vocational education. It is extremely important. Just try to find a skilled worker in the hard hat and hammer jobs. It's getting to be near impossible. And the people who do those jobs are older. What happens when they retire? Who's going to come in and fix your electricity? Our local electrician said that he can't get someone to work with him so he can train them on the job. They come, they go, they're gone. And he says, I want to retire within the next 10 years. I can't unless I can get somebody to come in and take over. So Ann Coulter had an extremely good idea for higher education. She said that if you are in high school, take the SATs, take the ACTs, take whatever qualifying tests you can, get a good score, and then go out to an employer and say, I have an A-minus average from high school. I got high scores on my SATs, on my ACTs. Would you please hire me? Because I've shown that I can do a job, I can learn. Rather than going and spending $50,000 a year in a higher education institution where you are going to be indoctrinated into socialism and communism and told how bad our country is, don't waste your money on that. Don't end up with $150,000 in debt that you'll never be able to pay back. Go get a job and learn the job. And employers may be far more eager to do that sort of thing now than they used to be in the past when they're getting college graduates who can't read, they can't write, they can't learn, they have no skills. In Jefferson, this allocation of money will be able to be used for college. You will be able to make savings, educational savings accounts to help pay for college. And that will go until the age of, I think, 24 is what we determined. So education will be financed by the government, but it won't be under the current system.
Yeah, I remember the best piece of advice my father gave me that I didn't take was when I was in high school. He said, you know, you ought to take a metal shop class or an auto shop class. And I remember, you know, I knew everything at the time, and I'm like, Dad, those classes are for the loser kids. I mean, I'm in advanced placement, I'm in you know, pre-calculus, and I'm in honors English, and I'm in physics. Well, I'll tell you what, Now, at almost 50 years old, I have not used physics. I have not used calculus. And it doesn't really matter what my level of English was. I could sure learn how to work on a car or do some welding. That would sure have come in handy. So, you know, I'd love to see those. Those classes are going away. A lot of the wood shop classes, metal shop classes, auto shop classes, those classes are going away. We need to bring those back. Those are where the real skills are learned. And, you know, there's a lot of kids that are very bright but not interested in school, and you put them in those classes and they thrive. And, I mean, and they, you know, do a great job for the general population. And so I'd like to see all those classes come back, too.
I would, too. And I have over 6 years of college. I am colleged to pieces. And yet, I don't think that everybody should go to college. It is a waste of time. And when you say, oh, everybody has to go and we're going to pay for everybody to go, then you are diluting the college education. If everybody gets a trophy, what's the trophy worth? If everybody gets a college education, what does that college education become worth?
Yeah, and how many jobs in humanities are out there, or art appreciation, or
that's true. My husband and I went to the same high school. He was 3 years ahead of me. I was in the college preparatory track in high school. My husband was in the industrial arts track. We did not take the same classes. He was 3 years older. I was just a dumb freshman when he was a senior, so we didn't know each other. But after we graduated, in life, I was able to discuss beautifully English literature. I could also do our income taxes because I got a good solid background in math. But when it came time to fix the car, when it came time to fix the roof, when it came time for all that industrial arts skill, my husband was right there on it. Now, which was worth more to us as a married couple, his ability to maintain and take care of things or my ability to discuss English literature?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's a genius when it came to auto repair. I was not a genius when it came to English literature.
And I wish I knew more of those things. And, you know, unfortunately, yeah, we could probably discuss English literature a little bit, but, you know, how boring would that be?
The Bard. Well, so. I enjoy it, so to me it's not boring. And let's discuss how you put a sentence together and take it apart. But and it was my career, so I did use it for teaching. But we cannot denigrate those skills just because they don't come from college. And in Jefferson, we anticipate a community college as being a purveyor of those skills, where you go to learn vocational skills, which are absolutely vital to our society.
And I have paid thousands upon thousands of dollars to mechanics to do jobs that I didn't know how to do, and I've yet to pay a English teacher or anybody else.
Exactly, yeah. It is a skill that our culture requires for certain people to carry on our traditions and our lore and our knowledge. But it's not for everybody, and we should not put everybody in college just because we can. As far as paying for college, as Bernie Sanders wants to do, what are you going for? Just to get a free education that's going to be worthless? If you have a women's studies degree, where are you going to make the money to pay back your college loans, for goodness sake?
I think Starbucks. I think that's where a lot of them are.
You're not going to pay back $150,000 on Starbucks. And then we have a generation of people who owe college loans and they can't buy a house. What we're doing is not working.
No, and that is a huge problem. I mean, you know, the kids take out loans and they go to school and they get their degree and they find out their degree is worthless. And there's 100 other people with the same degree that are also looking for a job. So the two jobs that are available, you know, you're good luck getting one of them. And in the meantime, you know, we can't hire enough welders and bridge builders and road construction guys and mechanics and whatever. So.
And when I was teaching, I would have gentlemen in the classroom at high school say, well, I want to be a cop. I don't need to learn all of this English stuff. I want to get out and drive a patrol car and shoot people sort of thing. And I said, you know, the most time spent as a cop is going to be writing reports. And you better know how to write them because they're going to end up in court. So the skill that I am teaching you here, you're going to need it no matter which profession you go into.
Especially if you go out and shoot somebody. There's so many reports to be written then. Hey, we're coming up on a hard break. We got Nick on the line, so hopefully Nick can hold over until after the break. So we're gonna go ahead and head off to our hard break, and we'll be back on the other side.
Now, Daddy didn't like trouble, but if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding, by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Michael Harrington. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says there would be big benefits for North Korea if it decides to give up its nuclear weapons.
The capacity for American agriculture to support North Korea so they can eat meat and have healthy lives. Those are the kind of things that if we get what it is the president has demanded, the complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization of North Korea, that the American people will offer in spades.
He was a guest on Fox News Sunday. North Korea, meantime, says its nuclear test site will be a thing of the past by the time President Trump and leader Kim Jong-un meet in June. North Korea's foreign ministry says all the tunnels at the country's northeastern testing ground will be destroyed in the next 2 weeks. Observation and research facilities, as well as ground-based guard units, will also be removed. President Trump has responded by saying the announcement is, quote, a very smart move and a gracious gesture. The president is urging the Senate to get its work done on funding before the August break or stay in Washington.
The president tweeted Saturday that wall and border security should be included. He also said that he is, in his words, waiting for approval of almost 300 nominations, worst in history. Mr. Trump blamed Democrats for doing everything possible to obstruct.
Ken Lorman reporting. ISIS has claimed responsibility for suicide bombings at three churches in Indonesia this morning that killed at least 13 people and wounded dozens more. The terrorist group claimed today's attacks in a statement on its Amaq news agency. French officials say the Russian-born man who attacked five people in central Paris with a knife yesterday had no police record and did not know his victims. An Interior Ministry spokesman says the man was born in the Russian Republic of Chechnya in 1997. He was on a list of people who could be radicalized. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Having debt does put stress on a marriage, on your health.
It just starts mounting up, especially with the interest. It just goes up. So I could definitely see there was stress in Lindsay, and that would spill over into our relationship and how we related to each other.
Ben and Lindsay called nonprofit Christian Credit Counselors to stop the creditor calls, lower their interest rate, and get one monthly payment they could afford.
The situation's definitely improved, and it's such a difference to not borrow to get things and you actually save to get them. It's a liberating feeling.
At Christian Credit Counselors, your freedom from debt is their number one priority. On average, their clients become debt-free up to 80% faster.
It's definitely freedom.
See how much Christian Credit Counselors can save you. Call a personal credit counselor for your free no-obligation debt analysis. Call 800-557-1985. Your journey to financial freedom begins now. Call 800-557-1985 or visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Call 800-557-1985.
Some high-tech wizards are working on something that could make ATMs a whole lot more secure.
It's called the Skim Reaper, a device that can detect whether a credit card skimmer has been installed on an ATM machine or a self-pay gas pump. It's the brainchild of University of Florida professor Patrick Trainer and two grad students. The Skim Reaper is a credit card thin gadget that slides into a card reader slot, sounding the alarm if a skimmer is present. Now undergoing field tests in New York City. Rich Thomason reporting.
On Monday, the U.S. moves its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, the holy city, at the explosive core of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and claimed by both sides as capital. The inauguration comes 5 months after President Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. The new embassy will operate temporarily from the U.S. consulate compound. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Michael Harrington. Britain's Information Commissioner's Office is backing an American academic effort to obtain his personal data from SCL Group, which includes Cambridge Analytica.
The ICO says SCL must provide the data within 30 days, warning the failure to do so would be a criminal offense. The enforcement notice found in favor of Professor David Carroll, saying his right to the personal information is protected by the Data Protection Act of 1998. The ruling says Carol sought his information from Cambridge Analytica in 2017 and was unhappy with the responses, prompting his complaint to the ICO.
Correspondent Jeremy House. Today is Sunday, May the 13th, a birthday for some notable people, including actor Harvey Keitel, who is 79 years old today. Stevie Wonder turns 68. Ohio Governor John Kasich is 66 today. And singer Darius Rucker of Hootie and the Blowfish, 52. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Okay, we are back with Jefferson. Well, no, we're back with Sovereign Mind.
Yes, the sovereign state of Jefferson.
Let's just look at some random thoughts. Oh, we've got Nick on the phone first. Let's go with Nick.
Nick, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay.
Hey, I wanted to share an experience I had with you guys with our educational system. When my son was a junior, he was working with me during the summer, and he was telling me about his friend Randy, who couldn't get a work permit. Randy got a B average, but he failed algebra. And he had a job lined up at Starbucks, and the school wouldn't give him a work permit. I told him, I says, well, tell Randy to come on. He can work with us. I'll pay him cash. But I thought to myself, now here's these morons at school. They can't even teach our kids. And they get to decide who's going to work and who's not going to work. And you've got kids that maybe aren't getting such good grades, it seems logical to me that they're going to have to go out and use their hands to work for a living. And we got these teachers saying, well, you can't learn to work until you're 18 and out of school because we're not going to give you a permit. I certainly hope you're not going to have work permits in the state of Jefferson.
Well, I never got a work permit when I was working in high school because I knew they'd limit my hours, and I didn't want my hours limited. So the boss reminded me a few times that I needed to go get a work permit, and I just conveniently forgot every time. So I worked 40 hours a week in the summertime, and I worked 40 hours a week during school breaks. And during the school, I probably worked 3 nights a week and both days on the weekends. So I, you know, even during school, I probably got 25, 30 hours a week. So. And as far as permits go, I don't know. The permit is the government taking a fee to do what you have the right to do. And
exactly my sentiment.
Yeah.
Let's see. Who should be responsible for the decision as to whether or not a student should work? Would that be the school or would that be the parents?
I think it ought to be the student.
Well, we can't let students who are under the age of adulthood make all of their decisions, but I certainly think that that would be a decision that would be made between the parents and their child. That's where the responsibility lies. It's not the school's decision. They don't make good decisions for your kids, necessarily.
Another point I'd like to bring up, I was listening to Carl's show here about a year or so ago, and Kurt Starman was on. And it slipped out that I think 72-73% of the general fund of Reading goes to wages and benefits. And I would dare say our schools are right there with them or a little bit higher.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I think about my career choices. And maybe if I were 19 again, instead of going to college, I think I'd be become a heavy equipment operator. I think I'd be wealthier today than I am.
Well, you know, it never works out the way you have it planned, Janet. All through high school, I wanted to be a hippie. And look at me now. I've got a haircut. I've got a job. I pay my bills. I don't use marijuana. And I look horrible in tie-dye.
But
it just never works out the way you got her planned, little sister.
That's right.
Have a great day.
I want two or three lives so I can go back and do things differently. We're talking about whether or not the school can make the decision for a work permit, let's look at a completely different attitude towards education. Why would the school get to make that decision? Why does the school get to make the decision as to whether or not you need to be there? Isn't that the parent's decision? Why do we have compulsory education? If at the age of 16, school isn't working for a kid, why wouldn't the student and the parents decide, okay, this is really not the path that you need to go. Let's look at an alternative. Let's find you an apprenticeship. Let's get you some training. I don't know, take a year off and tour Europe until you've grown up enough to want to learn something. That's the parent's decision. Compulsory education is a decision by the state that you need to be in a certain place at a certain time to learn the things that we want you to learn. And it's not the decision of the parents where the responsibility should lie. So should we even have compulsory education? Aren't parents best equipped to make those decisions for their kids?
Give the kid a participation trophy and find him a job.
Yeah. Is there a difference between public money and private money for school? If it's allocated to each student, then that's not really public money. It becomes the students' and parents' money to make their choices. As in Jefferson, we envision a separate system for K through 12 and then the university system. So they will not be joined together, and the K through 12 will be under the control of the counties. And the university and college system will be under the control of the state, a state department of education. But they will not be making decisions for K through 12.
Yeah, so if your county schools aren't any good, you can get rid of those county board of supervisors or that county school board.
County school board, that's right. Yeah, that's where the power will lie. Federal mandates. You know, technically, the federal government does not support schools because they can't. The Constitution does not give them the authority to interfere in schools. So they sneak under the tent. They've got this big nose, and it's called federal funding. It's Title I. They give it for special education. And once you take federal funds, you've sold your soul to the federal government. They get to dictate what you're going to do. So Title I, Common Core, No Child Left Behind, if you take funds for those programs, then you're under the control of the federal government. So under Jefferson, why would we ever take federal money and give away our sovereignty?
And that's how the federal government gets in everything. That's how they get into the highway speed limits. Every aspect of your life, the federal government has snuck in there through federal funding and said, well, we're going to fund this and we're going to fund that, but now we have control of this, and if you don't do what we say, then we're going to pull the funding. And of course, everybody's used to that funding. It's like, you know, heroin to a city manager or a state supervisor or whatever. Mark Baird has a brilliant plan on the federal funding issue and how we can go around that and get around that thing. We haven't talked about it for a while, so I'll just bring it up and remind everybody there is an idea out there to stop this federal liberty grab, so to speak. And that would be when you pay your federal income taxes, you don't pay them to the IRS. You pay them to Jefferson State, basically withholding or a fund. You pay them to the Jefferson State Fund, who then turns them over to the federal government. So if there's ever a time when the federal government says, oh, I'm sorry, you're going to have to do this Common Core in your schools. We know that you're self-funding and all this other stuff, but if you want your federal funds, you're going to have to do what we tell you to. Then guess what? The federal funds are collected by us and turned over to the federal government, so you can't threaten to withhold our own funding from us because we just won't turn it over to you. It'll go into that impound account and stay there.
I think we have a call from Norm.
Norm, are you on the line?
Hey, thank you very much. I'm a little older than people that's been calling in this morning, but I just wanted to say that when I was going to school in Utah as a young boy, they used to release us in the summer while school was still on to go out and help the farmers.
Yes, sir.
And then later as that went on, they decided, no, well, we can't do that. We have to get work permits. And most everybody got work permits. There was really nothing to stop you. And one more thing, when I got a little bit older, I went to work at a service station in Nevada. And Union Oil used to have a newsletter that come out every month. And one of the things that the automakers had planned, and this was in 49, they had planned that they would like someday to make a car that the only thing that people could work on was nothing. The only thing they could do to a car to keep it running was check the oil and the water.
Yeah, I think we're there.
No, we've come a long way since then, but they're getting close right now.
Yes, my husband is from Oklahoma, and he tells the same story. They let everybody out of school, and they'd all go out to pick the broom corn or the corn or whatever, and that included the teachers. That was a little side income for them. So the kids were out there, and the teachers were out there, and everybody brought in the harvest.
Yeah, there was a lot of things that they let kids out of school for that were more important than school. Deer season at one time used to be a week off because that was a very important thing. And, I mean, everybody was going to be out deer hunting anyway, so you might as well give the kids the time off because they weren't going to be at school anyhow. So, yeah, a lot of things were more important than school. And it came down to funding is basically what stopped all of that, because now if the kids miss school, they don't get the funds for them. So, you know.
And that's a concept that will not exist in Jefferson. We will not have daily average attendance funding.
And that's one of the reasons I'm behind Jefferson 100%. Hey, it's been nice talking to you guys.
All right, Norm.
Take care. Thank you, Norm. I'm going to throw out a concept here that is going to take some selling because we are so used to it that I need you to think about this. I need you to start considering why we do things the way we do because we've always done them. There's a story of a woman who was preparing a ham, and she cut the ham in half and put it into the pan, and then put it into the oven. And her daughter said, Mom, why did you cut that ham in half? And she said, well, that's the way my mother did it. So she started thinking about it, and she went to her mother and said, why do we always cut the ham in half? And her mother said, I don't know, that's the way my mother did it. So they went to Grandma and said, Grandma, why do we cut the ham in half? And she said, well, that's easy. I didn't have a pan big enough for the whole ham. So we have lost the reason for doing things. And now I want you to think about this. Why do we demand that teachers go to school for an extra year to earn a credential? What is the good of that credential? What is that teacher learning in school that makes them a far better teacher because University of California has given them a credential? Are they really better teachers? Are they really better prepared? Do we teach teachers how to teach, or is it like a ballet dancer? You give them the lessons, but they either have the skill or they don't. I don't think I have ever seen a teacher who is better because he had a credential. Do you realize that if Neil Gorsuch came to California today and said, I would like to go into Shasta High School and teach government, he could not legally do it because he doesn't have a California credential. Why do we have a credentialing requirement? Think about it. How much better would it be if we had teaching candidates apply for a job at the local school and it was up to the school board to decide their qualifications and whether or not they would be an effective teacher? Why could the school board not ask to see their education, their skills, their training? Why wouldn't the school board say, would you come into a classroom and let us observe your teaching skills? Why couldn't it be at a local level to decide who we want to have in our classrooms for our students? Why does it have to come from a credentialing department at a university? And we all know what those universities have become. They have become training grounds, propaganda for socialist and social programs. So let's think about not requiring credentialing for teachers. Tenure. Why? Why do we have a guaranteed job for teachers? I don't know what job you have. A truck driver, maybe you work at Penny's. Are you guaranteed a job? Do you have tenure? Oh, I've been here 2 years. You can't fire me. We need to look at that.
Yeah, that really irritates me as a taxpayer when I know that most of the employees that I fund, whether they work for the state or the county or the city or the state, you know, federal government, whatever, my taxes are funding them. Yet I have no say whatsoever as basically their potential boss. I mean, they should look at me as a boss. They should look at every taxpayer that comes into their office or whatever it is, department, as their boss. And wouldn't the world be a different place if Everybody that walked in the Department of Motor Vehicles, for instance, those people there sitting behind the desk looked at these, this is my potential boss here. I better treat them good. I better treat them well because they are paying my wages. And if they are unhappy with me, I can lose my position. Versus now, you know, they look at you and go, I don't care who you are. I have a union to protect me, and there's nothing you can do to get rid of me, so I can be as rude as I want to you. I can do whatever I want to you. I can, if I'm having a bad day, I can make you have a bad day because there's nothing you can do to me. So.
And now I am going to really attack a sacred cow.
Uh-oh.
Come on.
Here we go.
Think about why we do things the way we do things. Step outside the state of California. Think Jefferson. Think life, liberty, and property protections. Teachers' unions. Why? Why do they have a stranglehold on education, particularly in California? The CTA is a huge organization, and it amasses huge amounts of money every year from teachers. In my district in California, where I taught, I was required to pay union dues. I could not work unless I were a member of the union. Well, there was something called an agency fee payer, which I opted for, which meant I was not a member of the union, but I had to pay union dues. But as an agency fee payer, I had no vote in what the union did. But I had to pay only that portion of the dues that went towards negotiations on the part of the union. The rest of the money was refunded to me. And out of the, I think, $600 a year that I paid, I got back half. Now, why did I get back half of that? Because that's the amount of money that the CTA, the NEA, and my local association was paying for political donations. And believe me, they were not donating money to Donald Trump's campaign. I got a list of where that money went every year, and it was to Democratic socialist organizations and causes. Why do we require teachers to pay money into political activism that they do not necessarily support? So we should be a free and open Jefferson State that does not require people to join unions, unless you want to. I used to get a catalog from the CTA, and it would say, what has your union done for you lately? And my answer was always, nothing. They didn't come and help negotiate for my salary. They didn't provide me with benefits. All they did was take my money and give it to the Democratic Party if I allowed them to. So let's consider unions, particularly teachers' unions, in the state of Jefferson and education.
Yeah, private unions, I have no, that's between the owners, the workers, and the unions themselves. I have no issue on private unions whatsoever, but public unions, I do have a bit of an issue there because, again, the taxpayers are the people that fund those, and they should have a say in them. And as far as teachers go, there will always be a need for good teachers. Always, always, always. All good teachers will be in great demand. In fact, if we can control where our funding goes for our kids, if each kid can control the funding, good teachers will probably require a premium because they'll be in demand. Bad teachers, not so much.
And my husband was a state employee, and he belonged to an association through his employment. And he did not regret a dime that he paid to that association because they actually were out working for benefits and for the betterment of his job. It was a great association. He was not required to join, but everybody wanted to join because they actually did some good.
Yep. It looks like we have Morton on the phone. Morton, are you there?
Oh, yes. Barely can hear you. Just wanted to ask a question. Our founding fathers taught a new morality. How do we reestablish morality and get rid of all these pirates? This is one of our biggest problems. Janet obviously knows the difference between right and wrong, but the kids aren't being taught that. I certainly wasn't taught that in my schools, even though I'm an old man now. So there was a guy named de Tocqueville. He came from France. He wanted to find out why the United States was so good. Are great, and he found out it was in the churches. The churches were on fire to teach morality. How do we get the churches to teach morality again instead of rock and roll and escapism. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Morton. Yeah, we stopped threatening to remove their funding. We stopped threatening the churches with removing their tax status, with the federal government taking away their tax status. That's one way.
And it doesn't matter what the churches are teaching if the kids aren't there. So it has to be important enough to the parents to take their kids to church so they do learn morality. I don't want morality as such taught in the schools. That's not the place for it. I am sure that a lot of schools think they are currently teaching morality, but it's social justice. It's not really ethics. So I don't want to leave this up to government.
Yeah, and as far as the churches, you know, right now a lot of them are afraid to say anything. If it's anything political, obviously there's some great churches out there that aren't afraid of that. But a lot of the churches have gone to where they're afraid of their tax status being pulled. And again, that's where Jefferson, through interposition, can always step in, because, you know, if we have a federal government that would be going after a church, if that church was in Jefferson, Jefferson would be more than happy to step in between the church and the federal government, or a citizen in the federal government, and say, no, 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 not our citizens. You do not threaten our citizens. We control this state. They're members of this state, or this land is in this state, or whatever the case may be. And if you have a moral state that will step in between its citizens or its organizations and the federal government, a lot of that stuff will go away.
One final issue as far as education goes. If Jefferson is going to have its educational system mean something, if it's going to be taken seriously, then we do have to have some requirements. There have to be curricular requirements. I want politics, government, what used to be called civics, I want that taught in our schools. The Constitution needs to be taught. We have to have some of our cultural icons being expressed in our educational system. There has to be some sort of idea between right and wrong. Everything can't be okay. Situational ethics is not okay. We have to be able to say, despite the fact that George Washington and Thomas Jefferson came from plantations that owned slaves, we look at what they did good for us and recognize that they themselves were not favored. They did not favor slavery in their system, but it was not something they could change. We teach what was good about our country and understand that the bad stuff was kind of a memory of its time. So we have to have certain curriculum requirements. There have to be requirements for graduation and diplomas. Those diplomas have to mean something. We have to be able to send Jefferson students out into the world and say, I can do something. I know something. I learned something. I can do math. I can write a letter and have coherent sentences in it. I know how to punctuate. I know how to think. I know how to process information. If we're going to have requirements, then we have to hold our students to a standard. I was very happy when California said they were going to have an exit exam. And then I saw that their exit exam meant nothing because it was so simple, so basic. You took it when you were a sophomore, and then you had 79 times to take it until you were a senior. And then I saw students who actually graduated, even if they couldn't pass basic information. We have to have a standard so that our diploma means something. The employers out there can see that Jefferson students do come with skills that can be used.
Absolutely. And, you know, Jefferson students should be in demand out there. California students, not so much. So we want our Jefferson students to succeed. We have to give them a good education, a good background, and I think we have ways of doing that, and I think Janet has outlined a whole bunch of them. You couldn't ask for a better person to be working on the educational department in the state of Jefferson.
I spent my years in the trenches. I learned as much as my students did.
All right, looks like we're going to go off to another break. Phone lines are open, so you can give us a call at 605-4567. Phone lines are open.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name.
I'm Jeff Fink.
president and CEO of Cornerstone Community Bank, and I invite you to stop by our new downtown Reading branch located at 1845 California Street, one block south of Jack's Grill, or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Our team is ready to spoil you with personalized service.
Cornerstone Community Bank, we invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon to 2.
Our interviews on them give you the whole story rather than the mainstream media sound bites.
Here on KCNR 1460 AM, we've got the experts on politics, environmental craziness, veterans affairs, property rights, Agenda 21, foreign affairs, and everything in between.
The archives are always available online at wethepeopleradio.us.
It's the most fun you can have while talking about them.
Join Aaron and Bill this Sunday at noon for We the People. You'll hear great authors and commentators, professors and scientists, activists and military experts, researchers and whistleblowers, all spending time to inform us about their areas of expertise. We the People, brought to you by Team Power of Shasta Lake, your local Kubota and John Deere dealer. Call him at 530-226-9226. We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Spring is springing, the trees are leafing, the birds are chirping, and temperatures are on the rise. So, your heater's probably the last thing on your mind, right? Fact is, right now is the perfect time to prepare for next winter. Through June 8th, SST Oil is offering 20% off maintenance and 10% off parts with an additional 5% discount for our veterans. SST Oil Services monitor and Toyotomi brands of heaters and water heaters. When you call SST at 241-1167, ask about early bird discounts on kerosene May through July. SST Oil on Windham Lane in Reading, 530-241-1167.
Welcome back to Sovereign Minds. Well, we've been talking with our wonderful Jeffersonian teacher, Janet Chandler, and we have another wonderful Jeffersonian teacher on the line. Gary Hollihan, are you there?
Oh, yes. You're too kind, and I've been waiting for you to broach this subject, and Janet and company, I'm 1,000% in support of what you just said.
Well, thank you, Gary, but I want to know, what the heck do you know about education? Come on. Talk about something of which you know.
Well, yes.
For those of you who don't know, Gary has spent a career in education.
Yes, we call him the professor.
I think one of the main problems, and I can clarify, is CTA, which is the California Teachers Association, and the NAA. Those two are the big obstacles in improvement in education, because their main impetus is to protect the incompetent. And
absolutely.
One president, I think it was AFT, years ago, somebody asked him if what you were doing for the kids or advocating for the kids, and he said, no, they don't vote. The teachers are not for the kids. In fact, when we were doing some schedule changing at NOVA years ago, I found out what ran the educational system. The buses, number one, the cafeteria, two, and the work release program had a strong influence on it.
Yes, the schedule is built around the buses and when lunch occurs.
That's right. That was... We had to build the education and our scheduling around. And the unions are definitely against innovation. But, again, the unions are made up of people. But there are a lot of teachers who do a fine job, and there are a lot that are just riding along. And I would like to be a... How about an evaluator that drove around the state? I do it on my own dime. I can tell, and Janet, I'm sure you'll support me in this, you can tell what's happening in a classroom in 15 minutes if it's happening or it's not. Are the students engaged or are they not? And I would tell you, I would, in a heartbeat, I'd fire about a third of the teachers just because they need new blood and the students are not being serviced. Well, yeah, right. They're not being, their best interests are really not number one. It's the God Almighty dollar and federal and state funding.
Yes, it takes a whole school of people to make a good educational system, and unfortunately, the teachers are always the last to be asked as to what we can do to improve. And
yes.
It's any system. Everybody involved is not good. There are always those few that are not being effective and are not competent. So teaching is no different from anything else. But the difference is that if your kid gets a bad teacher for a year, they've lost a year of education.
All right. I'll depart. Your conversation is fantastic, and I'm so glad that, again, the state of Jefferson will eliminate a lot of problems, assuming it will become the state of Jefferson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
You know, in Jefferson, when we were writing the Constitution, the one thing that we were trying to build into it was accountability in office. How can we make our government accountable to us? And a lot of it has to be done with codification, the writing of laws. So the Constitution is writing the framework on which those laws will be based. But in California, the problem is that there's no accountability. What happens if someone violates his oath of office? Nothing. You can vote him out, maybe. So with our Constitution, we were trying to build in some accountability. And that means that you take an oath, you say, I am going to uphold this Constitution, I'm going to uphold the laws. What happens if you don't? Well, in Jefferson, we want there to be not just civil penalties, but criminal penalties for violation of oath. We want a system in which a citizen can come forth and say, this official violated his oath and caused me harm, and that would have some teeth in it. How many times have we been told, oh, yes, elect me, and I will back the state of Jefferson at the in Sacramento. And then they get in and they say, oh, well, you know, I really can't. They violated their oath. They did not say, do what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, and accountability for someone that's taken an oath is one thing, and that's very important, and there should be criminal aspects to that. But there should also be accountability. You know, that's a great word. There should be accountability, in my opinion, to back to public employees, whether they're teachers or DMV workers or sheriffs or, you know, whoever, sheriff's deputies, excuse me, sheriff's an elected official, and he should be under that oath of office. But, you know, again, if the taxpayers are supporting a worker and they're making their living off of taxpayers, they should be accountable to those taxpayers. You know, we don't want them to be shaking in their boots for somebody that comes through their DMV door is having a bad day and gets them fired just because, you know, they reported them to somebody. But there should be some accountability. There should be some accountability for bad teachers. There should be some accountability for bad public employees. I mean, there needs to be an accountability. If I'm paying for them to and supporting them, there's accountability in my job. I work for a private company. If I don't do my job or I do something, you know, horrible, then I'm going to be fired, and that's just the way it is. And that's, I'm accountable for that, and I think everybody should have accountability, plain and simple.
And we in Jefferson would like to see a stronger grand jury system. We want a grand jury system that isn't just a civil grand jury that investigates and writes a report. We would like it to actually be a place where indictments can come, where if you have a criminal complaint, you can take it to the grand jury and it will be heard. And I do not want to have a non-governmental organization in charge of our grand jury. There is a grand jury association that writes the rules for California grand juries. It isn't governmental. It's in essence, private. It's a non-governmental organization. What is this about? Why are we supporting a grand jury just to write a report that gets published in the Record Searchlight every year. What good is that?
Yeah, last year's grand jury, Shasta County grand jury, and kudos to all of them. I mean, they did a great job. They dug up some dirt on a whole bunch of things. We read it. It was wow. This was, you know, they did really did got some dirt on some stuff, and they really dug into some things. And man, they really did some great work. And then what happened?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Did they bring charges? Indictments?
Nothing.
No.
I mean, they did their job, you know, which was looking into what they were supposed to look into, and they did a great job doing that. And then what happened? Nothing. Nothing happened.
And that's the problem, because we have, in essence, a civil grand jury, not a criminal grand jury. And we need it to be criminal so we can hold these people accountable when the dirt is there and we know it. Pretty much like in our federal system where we have all of these crimes that we see being committed, and Jeff Sessions sits there and says, oh.
Yeah, not going to do anything.
Another change that we would like to see, or a reinforcement in the state of Jefferson, the legislature cannot delegate lawmaking authority to any agency. We cannot have bureaucratic agencies making regulatory law that will hold us accountable to something that was not passed by the legislature.
Absolutely. Laws are supposed to be passed by the legislature, voted on and signed into law by the executive branch, and that is not being done now. I mean, California Air Resource Board, perfect example. If you don't put a $50,000 filter on your big rig or on your diesel, then I'm sorry, you're just going to have to go out of business. We're going to confiscate your truck. Well, who said that? Where was that law passed? Well, it wasn't passed. It was just implemented by a board who wasn't elected, yet they are controlling every aspect of our lives. And that's just, you know, one of the newest ones. But look at all of the fees and all of the fines that are imposed upon us by people that are not elected, by laws or statutes that were not voted on, were not voted into law, did not go through the legislative branch. I mean, our government was set up with three co-equal branches, supposedly co-equal. And, you know, there's a way to pass a law, and people have input on that. And nowadays, it's just one agency after another imposing their will upon whoever they want to.
And it will actually say in the Constitution that any of these rules and regulations passed by bureaucracies will have no force of law. You can say anything you want, but I can ignore it because it was not passed by the legislature. And the legislature is the only body that can pass laws. They're the only ones. There is no delegating that authority to anyone else.
And in a perfect world, the way our system's set up, if the California Air Resource Board told me that I have to put a $50,000 filter on my big rig, which I don't have, the big rig or the filter, but if they were to do that and I were to say no and they were to take me to court, then the jury should be able to decide whether that's an enforceable law or not. But we've taken that right away from them also.
One of the most disgusting afternoons, well, days I ever spent was attending a California Air Resources Board hearing in Sacramento, chaired by Mary Nichols. It was beyond disgusting, the attitude that board has toward the people of California and the truck owners who are out there trying to make a living. All of the big trucking companies came up and praised the CARB because of the wonderful things they're doing to clean the air. Of course, they're getting stipends and grants to retrofit their trucks. But the poor guy with two trucks from Fresno who came in there and said, "You're breaking me. I can't afford this. What am I supposed to do?" And Mary Nichols said, "Well, I guess you're just supposed to go out of business."
Yeah, and you know, it's what surprises me is the one side that supports these kind of things are totally against big business and big corporations and all this other, you know, big companies. Yet they support these bureaucrats that make all these regulations, whether it's farmers or truckers or whoever. You know, dairymen is a perfect example. There used to be small independent dairies all over this state. And then the regulations came in, and they got to the point where they had to keep track of how many cows and how many times they went to the bathroom. And, I mean, everything else, it was so ridiculous that you have no small dairymen out there anymore. They all just gave up, you know, grow hay, got rid of their cows, whatever. And now big corporations control all them. Trucking industry is another example. a California Resource Board came in here, and the independent trucker that owns one truck, all of a sudden he's pushed out of business, and then these giant corporations are the only ones that can afford to invest millions of dollars and put the things on. Well, they've pushed the little guy out of business. They look at it in the long term. There's now they can raise their prices because there's no more competition because we pushed the little guy out of business. And it's like you guys are supporting. You're against corporations and big business, but yet you're supporting these bureaucracies that push little guys out of business and create only big businesses. It just
and
makes
that,
no
that's,
sense.
That's the plan. They're all working together.
I guess, but yeah. If you get down to the voter themselves or the little guy, the little person out there, I guess they fall for the thing of, well, they're doing what's best for all of us. So we're going to support the California Resource Board because we want clean air. Okay, well, in the meantime, but we're against big corporations. Well, the California Resource Board just pushed out every independent trucker in the station and in the whole state, and now all you have is big corporation truckers. Oh, well, that's not how we planned it, but that's how it worked out. You know, I mean, come on, wake up. Look what's going on.
Yeah, we have a lawsuit going before the federal government right now for lack of representation and dilution of vote. And, of course, it's very important to us in Jefferson that we maintain some representation, and we don't end up with the same problems that we are having now with California. So the dream is, the goal is, our vision is that in Jefferson, the state Senate will be made up of one state senator for every county. And, of course, at this point, that may be 23
and possibly 25 when we become state of Jefferson, because there's a couple counties that do not have signed declarations, but they're right in the middle of Jefferson or to the far northern corner. And I don't think California is going to send a snowplow up to Del Norte County all the way through Jefferson to get there. So there, we have 23 signed counties or two on the way to be signed in the Secretary of State's office and two more that will probably be drug along with us. So,
and then for the People's House, whether it's called a House of Representation or an Assembly, as it's called in California, that will be done also by county, but it will be done by county population. So each county will have a number of people to the representative house based on the population in that county. And it will range from a minimum of one to as many as, 15 in the largest. And then that comes up with the question, well, won't we still then be ruled by the large population counties? So in Jefferson, we actually envision an electoral college to even out the problems of representation between small population counties and large population counties.
And remember how it's set up to pass a law, how that is set up. The bills are written in the Assembly, and they are voted on by in the Senate and signed into law by the executive. So as far as if we had 100 assemblymen or 1,000 assemblymen, yes, most of them would be in the larger population centers. But again, those bills, they could write all the bills they wanted. They wouldn't be passed into law until they went through the Senate. And the Senate will have rural representation. So as far as being run by the population centers or the larger populated counties, not necessarily, because those bills have to be passed into law. And that's where, MoDoc County will have as much say on passing that into law as Shasta County or Butte County. So, the larger counties aren't going to run everything because we're going to have that check and balance system that we should have right now.
Also, if you are a legislator, you will be after we get Jefferson going. So this won't apply to the first couple of years because there will be a lot of lawmaking in that first couple of years. But after that, each legislator will be limited to proposing one bill per year.
And that bill has to go through the Department of Constitutionality or the Constitutionality Committee before it ever gets to the Senate to be passed into law. So
it will have to indicate the connection between that bill and the appropriate constitutional authority to perform that function. And that will limit the number of bills that can be proposed in Jefferson. Also, it will not be a full-time legislature. They will meet every other year. And on the off years, they will be proposing and working on a budget for the following 2 years. So they will not be living in Sacramento, living high off of your dime.
Yeah, they will be out doing their regular job, like they should be before they go to their term where they, you know, sit down for a couple weeks in the legislature.
And also we want to protect our sovereignty in Jefferson. And that means that, yes, we are going to follow the Constitution of the United States and that it will be stated in our Jefferson Constitution. However, we will only follow those enumerated powers in the federal Constitution. Just because they pass a law saying that every student in Jefferson has to have a course in gender studies, that's not granted by the federal Constitution, so that's not law, and we will not honor that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that'll be up to the county. The county will decide. And if your county decides against your wishes, well, then you will have to remove those county representatives. I mean, it's going to be, again, back to the people, back to a smaller government where you have a say in things. Our representation model with the assembly is going to be, it's not going to be 500,000 people per assemblyman. It's going to be more like a city council model of government where it's a few thousand people make a difference, and you will know who your assemblyman is because it probably is a neighbor of yours. Your kids probably go to school with their kids, whatever. It's going to be somebody you recognize, you know. It's only going to take you and several of your neighbors to get them back out of office. Real simple.
And depending on what population you look at for our counties now, and we're not sure just how many it will be when Jefferson actually does happen, but we envision having about 10,000 people per representative in the representation house. So it will be far less than what we have now.
And that'll be less people than a Reading City Council member represents right now.
That's
so
right.
Put that in perspective.
Even at the county level, what is it, about 35,000, 40,000 people per supervisor?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, again, your supervisors, you know, there's a few more people to them. And we also want to make it easier to get them out of office, too. Right now, they just attempted getting somebody out of office in the city of Reading, a couple people there on the recall effort. And, I mean, the hoops they had to jump through and the days, and you had to go for the second full moon of the spring on the, you know, it was so ridiculous. And then you only had so many days after that. And, I mean, that's totally ridiculous. Basically, do your job or it's going to be real easy to remove you from office. It's going to be as easy to get you out of office as it is to get you in office.
And we do say in our Constitution that we recognize the federal Constitution and their laws are supreme, but only those laws that are part of the enumerated powers. And the state of Jefferson does not cede our sovereignty to the federal government.
Yeah.
We remain a sovereign country.
And Janet spoke of that last week, and that's something that people need to understand. The United States of America, the original 13 colonies, the United States, at that time, we had the state of England, we had the state of France, we had the state of Italy, we had the states. The state was considered a country. So those 13 colonies were 13 separate countries with one central government over or representing them in certain areas. And, you know, we have a hard time understanding that now because, of course, we think of the United States as our country. Well, each state is really a country that the United States represents in treaties and printing of money and affairs, foreign and domestic and whatever. It's not, we are sovereign. That's what sovereign means. We are our own country.
And here's where English grammar and punctuation comes in handy. Technically, we are not the capital U, capital S, United States of capital A, America. We are the small U, United, capital S, states.
Yeah.
We are the states that are united in America. And it makes a difference. That capital letter U makes all the difference.
Yep, that U was not capitalized in the past because the United part was not important. The states part was important. So we've changed that, but that is something to wrap your mind around. The United States, the U.S., the U was a small letter because that was a small part. The states were the important part.
And I have a little problem when I say the Pledge of Allegiance and we talk about one nation under God. No, we are 50 nations under God.
And 51 soon enough.
51 coming any time. But it's just a new way of looking at things, our sovereignty. Who has control of us, we or someone else? And I want Jefferson to be a country that is sovereign, that joins together with 50 other countries to turn over certain acts and responsibilities to a central government to perform things that I cannot do well on my own, such as protect myself from foreign invasion, to negotiate for me, to conduct trade with foreign countries. They're not supposed to be taking care of my internal problems. They're supposed to be taking care of the external ones. And they will if we force them to.
Yep, absolutely. The Constitution is pretty clear on that. And, I mean, that's something the Bundys have been fighting for quite a while and trying to make people understand what the federal government's role is supposed to be according to the Constitution. Lavoie Finicum was shot dead because he was trying to explain the powers of the federal government and the limited powers that they are supposed to have.
And they don't want to be told that they have limited powers. They want to have complete control of everything. The baby has grown too big for the nest.
Yes, it has.
And we can no longer feed that baby in our small nest. Last week we were talking about eminent domain, and I wanted to make a comment about that. Under Jefferson, if a property is taken by the government for a public use, to build a road, to build a bridge or something, they will have the right to do that with fair and just compensation. And if within 7 years they don't use it for that express purpose, then the property will be offered back to the original owner for repurchase. And if they decline, then it can be sold on the private market, but only for private use. And if the government goes against this law, if they violate this section, then there are penalties, and they can be charged with a felony because what they have committed is fraud. If you say you're going to do something and then you don't do it, it's fraud.
Yeah, and the eminent domain came up one other time. Somebody had, you know, asked me about it or question, and I try to think of something that, you know, would be an eminent domain issue. And as far as a road goes, I mean, for the most part, you should be able to get around most people's property. Roads can turn, but the only one that I could really think of that would be for the common good that, you know, might be an eminent domain situation would be water storage. Right now, we need more water storage up here. For whatever reason, California doesn't want to do that. They just want to take the water storage we have and move it to other places. But that would be one of the things I would think of an eminent domain might fall under is, you know, hey, we need to build a new reservoir, and I'm sorry, this, you know, land here is going to be underneath it. So, but I can't really think of a whole lot of reasons why eminent domain would come into play. I just don't think you should go do everything you can not to take somebody's property.
It should be very rarely used.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But then we have the absolute criminal case back in New Jersey where Suzanne Kelo and her fellow residents were eminent domained out of their homes. The government took them, and it actually went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, yeah, the government has the right to take it if it's for the better good of the community. Well, it was going to be for a business that was going to pay higher taxes. And the government took their property, tore down all the houses, and then changed its mind. The company that was going to take over that property changed its mind, and today that land sits vacant.
And I think that's how a lot of eminent domain now is the higher good is more tax dollars,
right,
for the county agency or state agency that's trying to take the land. So,
and that's not what the founding fathers had in mind when they put eminent domain into the Constitution.
And that's not what we have in mind when we do the Jefferson Constitution either. It's definitely going to have to be public good, and it's going to have to be something that you can't get around. You can't do anything else other than take that land. And you know, even then, it's going to be a tough deal because...
And if you were ever concerned that the federal government is violating your constitutional rights with gun control and the state government in particular, please be aware that in the federal constitution, it says that there can be passed no ex post facto law, which says we can't pass a law that is illegal today, what was legal yesterday, and then charge you with a crime today when what you did at the time was okay. Think about gun laws. How many of you have guns that are now illegal because the government changed its mind on what is illegal today compared to yesterday?
Not me. I ain't admitting to nothing.
I have no guns. No guns. So look at those California restrictions on guns and consider if they are ex post facto laws, which are unconstitutional.
Yeah, the 10-round magazine is a perfect example.
Yeah.
You could own a 30-round magazine for an AR-15. You couldn't use it, but you could own it. And then California just passed a law here a year or so ago that said now it's a felony if you even own it. So an AR-15 magazine that you may have had for the last 30 years that has supposedly remained empty because it's illegal to use it, now all of a sudden you're a felon if you don't turn it in. Now that did get overturned by a court because exactly the ex facto law, it was illegal to do that.
We're done.
We are.
That clock is saying no more.
All right, folks, it's been great. Hopefully we'll have Mark and Linda here next week. So thank you all for your time.
See you tomorrow and on the 1st of June.